What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we, we're forward-looking on this station and as a city. We're looking ahead to 2025, but boy, when a chart like this comes out, I like to think this is going to get me excited for a new play caller for the Texans. I choose Seth. We'll lay this out in a second here. There's a chart that dropped yesterday on Twitter, a graph that shows ultimately it shows the play calling success of the 32 offensive play callers in the NFL last year, and it's not great for Bobby Slowik.
It tried to separate the players from the play calling in such a way that what was this guy doing with what he had and the tools he had at his disposal? And it didn't look good for the Texans.
No.
So it's a nice graph with, Matt LaFleur is up in the upper right quadrant. Kyle Shanahan's over to the right. Liam Cohen, who just completely turned around the Bucs offense, they're up in that upper right quadrant. And then way, way, way down at the left, you have to, on your phone, you have to click on the graph to even see the Texans logo. Bobby Slowik, all by himself in the very bottom left corner of the draft, just trying to gain a little bit of ground on the second worst Raiders. It just looks disgusting.
You framed it perfectly, because if you look at it on Twitter, there's actually two graphics. There's the graph itself that has the logos dotted all over the place.
Yeah.
And then they took that and they made a chart with the 32 names and some percentages with, some of the percentages. If it's a really dark green, that's good. If it's a really light green, one of those things. So there's two graphics. And if you look at it on Twitter, you can't see the entirety of each graphic when you look at the tweet.
Bobby,
you have to actually open that whole graph to be able to see Bobby, because he's so far off to the left.
It looks like he didn't hear the starter's pistol. It's just kind of like he's in his sprinting crouch, and everybody else is taken off, and he's just sitting there. He all of a sudden seized up fight or flight. Yeah.
Well, in the summary of this, the tweet and the chart come from somebody named Joseph Bryan, who's using things like he says using PFF grades and play calling data from the last 15 years, I created scores on how well a play caller influenced each regular season. You may agree or disagree, but the stats are solid. And so then he tweets the graph we're talking about, where you have those various
2024 season.
Last season, and you got the various names Seth just said of very well respected coordinators that are in the upper right hand quadrant. You got Bobby Slowik barely out of the starter's gate at the bottom left corner of the bottom left quadrant. All due respect to Jim Irsay, the bottom quartile of the bottom quartile. And the big thing that comes out of this when you start reading the thread is that Bobby Slowik was not only the worst play caller of the 2024 season, but according to this metric that this Joseph Bryan has, he is the worst of all 15 seasons that this study is part of.
The worst since 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the worst score he had last year. It matches, I think, the eyeball test and what you felt about everything.
You felt about it, yes.
Well, I've talked about it without being able to, because honestly, and the guy that put this together admits, he's very transparent, obviously, this is really hard. It's hard to separate the PFF grades from the entire offense and how that affects grades and everything.
Yep.
So it felt good when I looked at it. The one thing that I put a little asterisk on it is that Andy Reid is also in this bottom quartile too.
Okay.
So is Andy Reid, was he that atrocious? Was the offense bad because Andy Reid is all of a sudden a bad play caller?
I hesitate
to endorse that.
Yeah, I do too. And yet, this is one of those charts I want to believe is true. Because it makes me feel better about the upcoming season. Like, then if this chart is true, then what the Texans did this offseason was exactly what they should have done.
Well, what have I been telling you entirely the whole way is that if Nick Caley is just an average offensive coordinator, it should be a big improvement for the Houston
100%,
Texans.
100%, yes.
If he even, like, leave play calling out of it. He could just randomly point at plays on his card, but if they're executed properly,
correct,
then they'll be a better offense.
Yep.
That was a, you guys know, one of the things that was driving me insane last year was that Bobby Sloak was somehow separating the offensive coordinator from the actual execution. Like that, in a way of, to me, it always felt like kind of sneakily blaming the players.
Yes,
when in fact, as the offensive coordinator, your most important role is the execution.
Yeah.
Play, are we talking about play calling?
Yeah.
Do you know how many great offensive minds there are where the play calling is actually relatively plain and straightforward?
Yeah.
They just execute like madmen.
Yeah.
And they were doing none of that last year.
No. And obviously the organization and D'Amico Ryan specifically disagreed with Bobby's assessment of what the problem was.
I'll go, because immediately I can hear people thinking like, oh, which offenses are that? Peyton Manning and his offenses. Yeah. They were relatively simple offenses.
Yeah.
They just, Drew Brees, same way. They just executed everything so seamlessly.
Mm-hmm.
And they just had all the right tweaks to actually make things work and go.
Yep.
But yeah, Peyton of all the, like, it was not the complexity of that offense that made it work. So, it's Bobby Slowick and his inability to get proper execution out of his guys. If you can just get somebody who's average, they're a better football team.
Yeah.
So hopefully Nick Caley's better than average. Not so much that he gets a head coaching offer right away.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's right somewhere there in the sweet spot.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Bobby.
Have some glaring issues somewhere along the way in the first season. So where statistically you don't look that good, but you figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, yeah.
As opposed to getting head coaching interviews after your first season and then being this in your second season.
Yes.
Bobby, yeah. Bobby's a unicorn, man. He's a unicorn, but the body is like a donkey instead of a horse. Like, instead of like a rippling muscle horse, it's like it's Eeyore with just these unicorn horns. Like, he's that far outside the graph, man.
He's one of those. No, he's that goat man from mythology.
Yeah.
Is that a satyr?
No.
Whatever it is. It's like you're kind of like, wow, that's unique, and I don't think it should exist in nature. I'm going to shoot it. Yeah.
Right.
You see a unicorn, you're like, oh, behold the unicorn.
Yeah.
I'm going to change things in my life.
True.
You see a satyr, and you're like, I'm going to kill that thing.
Satyr.
Yeah.
Good. This is a good question. This is a good question on the text line. You brought up Liam. You said Liam Cohen's in that upper right-hand quadrant, right?
Yeah.
If Liam Cohen is near the top of this thing, does that make you more concerned about the Jags this year? They also asked where the Colts and Titans OCs were on this. I'll find that while you answer that question. So.
We talked about this a little this week, because Liam Cohen did a really good job with Tampa last year. And, you know, that's an offense now going into this year when the Texans face them. That'll be their third new offensive coordinator in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So he did it in 1 year, really turned them around, and in almost every statistical category took them from near the bottom to near the top. And Baker Mayfield had the best season of his career, statistically at least. So, yes, I think Liam Cohen, just like it is with Shane Steichen in Indianapolis, I feel like Liam Cohen is a bona fide offensive coordinator. It's just a matter of, all right, but is he an offensive coordinator who's also a head coach?
Yeah.
Because he has a lot of, if you go by looks, which I think matters for coaches. Not handsomeness of face or anything.
You know,
but just overall demeanor, the way you carry yourself and everything. Right. He kind of looks like a goofy dude that's a career offensive coordinator.
He's dopey. He's
really good
dopey.
At it, but yeah. So we'll see.
Exactly.
He's got an Opie Griffith vibe to him.
Yes.
You know? It's like, okay, Opie, great character and everything, but I don't want you actually being the sheriff someday.
No.
You're gonna get shot by the first perp you encounter.
Yeah, and I definitely don't want you calling plays for my offense.
A little bit of a Mike McDaniel. Not as goofy as Mike McDaniel, but just that. Like, is this a leader of men?
Yeah,
I'm not so sure.
That'll be the big thing. To answer the texter's question, where are the Colts and Titans? Exactly where you, especially with the Colts, exactly where you think they'd be. The way this graph works is the horizontal axis is how good you are at calling passing plays. The vertical axis is how good you are at calling rush plays. The Colts are way up the top near. They're like the second best team in terms of the rush calling.
Yeah.
They're not very good. The team who had a quarterback complete less than 50% of their passes. Now, this is independent of players. This is just play calling. But you know which way the wind's blowing. They're really good on the run game, not so good on the pass game. The Titans aren't very good at either, but they're much better than the Texans. Brian Callahan, I guess, would be the play caller there. You know, Shane Steichen in Indianapolis.
You know, I have a hard time saying the word availability. I have to, like, consciously think, don't say it the way people make fun of you for saying it.
Mm-hmm.
I've never realized the way you say the word access. You say access.
That was, I misspoke.
You said,
yeah,
you got horizontal access. Said horizontal, and I was like, oh, that sounds sexy.
Yeah.
I've been granted horizontal access.
Wait till
no,
the
but
vertical.
Then you said, I thought you might have misspoken, but then you said vertical access also.
Yeah, I misspoke.
Maybe you just might say it that way.
I misspoke twice. Yeah, I don't
know. Is that how you always say it?
I don't know. I got to go back
and look. It's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
Where I grew up, they say elementary instead of elementary.
Okay.
And I didn't realize it until the God bless this job. People made fun of me for it on the text line.
Well, how do you say availability?
I can't even. I used to say like availability or something.
Oh, really?
I got mocked relentlessly for it on the text line. I was like, oh yeah, that's dumb.
You say a few words like Canadian people do. You say organization sometimes. I'm not judging on that, but like that's the one where, like if what Seth say that's unique, maybe indigenous to where his upbringing, I would say he says some more. He lived closer to Canada than most here and says a couple of words out there like a Canadian person would say.
I said the other one, I weirdly say, I'll say Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Stress the Fitz.
Yeah, my wife's from the same area as me and she makes fun of me for that.
Yeah.
I say cocaine. But that's because of Eric Clapton more so than anything else.
Yeah.
That's not a
song influence.
That's not the way I asked for cocaine when I was, you know, a child growing up.
I got you. I got you.
Mama. I guess some of the medicinal cocaine.
I guess I do. Yeah. You know what? I guess that is. I'm just trying to think. Like, I'm going to say it right now in my brain. I'm like, yeah, I guess that is how I say it. Axis.
Better than axis or something like that.
Yeah.
You're not trying to sound fancy.
Yeah. No. Not at all. Axis. Yeah, axis. Yeah, that is how I say it.
We get on the vertical
I'm in my head
axis,
a little.
And then we get the carry the X and then the Y.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So we say all this to say that it's going to be a whole lot better in 2025.
That's right.
The play calling. Yeah. Make a shirt that says horizontal access, Seth, and I'll buy it. That's what somebody just said on the text
You've
page.
You've been granted horizontal access.
Wait until you get the vertical access. Little freaky. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Off and running on a Friday. Having a good time with you here. Appreciate you getting up with us. Headlines coming
barely
up.
Barely understanding what Sean's even talking about.
I know. How did I make it this far, mispronouncing access?
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Live from the Mo Karam Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday. We will have Take a Mania coming up at 9 o'clock, our weekly segment where we take the worst takes we've heard this week and put them up against the current champion, who right now is John McClain, his take on the signing of Damon Arnette last week. We'll have the champ, we'll play the champ, and then we've got challengers, and we will see if there's a new champ. So the Texans have picked up a few guys on the defensive side of the ball. Not that they need a ton over there, but I do think it's interesting that there are guys out there that have been productive players, been decent players at other places that are looking. Look at the Texans now, Seth, I'm guessing, as a place, especially in the front seven, where I go do a one-year deal there, and maybe I can get a bigger deal somewhere else. We've seen that work out for guys. Sheldon Rankins it worked out for. Now he's back here doing it again. You know, he had a good one-year deal with the Texans, had a nice season, went and got more money with the Bengals, and that only lasted 1 year. Now he's back here. Two of those players we're going to hear from here right now. Darryl Taylor is one of them. He played for the Bears last year, and he's been a productive pass rusher at times in his career. He signed a 1 year, $5 million deal, $5 million and change with the Texans. And he was on Good Morning Football this week, and he said it is personal this year for him.
Man, it's personal this year because, you know, I feel like I left a lot on the table in Chicago, and, you know, I'm in a great place where, you know, the offense is, you know, going to do that thing, and, you know, we have a great coaching staff to, you know, be able to put me in position to be able to help our defense out this year and, you know, make a lot of plays. So I'm excited about that. So that's the reason that, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, playing with much of a chip on my shoulder than I ever played with. So I'm just excited to be there and excited to offer what I got, you know what I'm saying, my skill level to the Houston Texans, man.
He's got 24 and a half sacks in four seasons so far in the NFL.
In his second year in the league in 2022, he had close to double digit sacks.
Nine and a half.
Nine and a half sacks.
Yep.
Really promising start. And then he's never really developed into a physical run player, but he's also, and it's ironic they started off in Seattle because I'm about to use Jason Babin as an example here. Jason Babin got drafted into Houston and was an outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme, and it never quite worked for him here. He ended up going to Seattle and playing in a 4-3 scheme at the time where he could just play defensive end with his hand in the dirt, mm-hmm. and it was off to the races. He became a much better player, played at a few different places after that. At one point was one of the sack leaders in the NFL when he was playing in a 4-3 defense that had a lot of similarities to this. When he was in Tennessee, that's kind of the roots of this current Texans defense.
Yep.
So likewise with Darrell Taylor, he's been on a 3-4 team and playing as like an outside linebacker type or just not always as pinning your ear backs and get to the quarterback the way they do with the Texans. So the scheme change might be really big for him. You might really get the best version of him in this scheme.
That'd be great. You know, we know Will's missed a couple games each year so far, you know, and you need a little bit of depth back there. Derek Barnett's
whether you miss games or not, they're going to rotate the defensive linemen. Ideally, they want eight guys on game day that can all play.
Yep.
So, yeah, he might be one of those sneaky X factors that people aren't talking about a lot that ends up having a big impact on in at least a few games this year.
Yep. EJ Speed. Another new player. Another player who signed a 1 year, I think $3+ million, can get to $5 million if he hits some incentives. But again, like a 1 year prove it kind of deal for a guy who, you know, EJ Speed's been around the league even longer than Darrell Taylor. EJ Speed came in, I think, in 2019. So he's been on some decent Indianapolis Colts teams. He leaves Indianapolis after several years there to come to Houston. He was on with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on Texans All Access and was asked, why the Houston Texans?
I like what was going on over here. The great draft pick in C.J. Stroud, of course. A lot of guys, younger guys who came into the league and, you know, probably wasn't expected to be who they are today is doing that here in Houston. So that just shows that it's a place where a lot of people is growing. Wins in the win column obviously speak for themselves. Been to the playoffs, you know, it's a team that's familiar with the playoffs, and just getting in and just, you know, finding my role within that situation where I can help and get to the end goal, which is a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he mentioned C.J. Stroud first. It's not a big surprise. I think they have the same representation. I think he's a Mulligetta guy, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But like that he mentioned C.J. first, I think C.J. is probably a draw for a lot of guys that are looking around at the, you know, looking at spots to land.
Well, when EJ Speed and CJ Stroud were kind of going back and forth at it on social media, it was genuinely playful between those two guys. They're both friends. They get along fine. There was another part in this interview where he talked about specifically just how many different ways there are for different linebackers to contribute. And that's what I think he probably saw is that, A, it's a good defense. He's kind of in a prove-it deal. And that he's going to have opportunities to play even if he doesn't start, because D'Amico's going to want to use different packages for when to stop the run, when to, you know, when can we get three linebackers on the field? Because they played with two linebackers, especially in the first part of the season last year, a lot. And some of that was due to injury, but also some of that perhaps not trusting the guys, the other guys that they had on the depth chart. But when they had to go up against heavy personnel, when they had multiple tight ends or a fullback, the Texans struggled to kind of match up physically.
Yeah.
So there's times they're still going to run nickel more than anything else, but there's times where you'd really like to have three run stuff and linebackers on the field. And EJ Speed is very, very good against the run.
Yeah, that's good. Here is EJ Speed. Why do you like playing for a former linebacker in D'Amico Ryans?
He does like to talk to you guys.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that he says just makes a lot of sense, just mm-hmm. because he's been in a situation. You feel what I'm saying? He knows the footwork. He's played in certain situations, knowing down and distance and all that type of stuff. So it's little interesting things that like he can just say to you that's like, you know what? That does make sense, and it's actually applying on the field in certain situations. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. a lot of stuff that some people just can't relate to.
Yeah, the thing that popped into my mind when he was talking about that was Jamie Sharper, who came to the Texans in the inaugural year after winning a Super Bowl with the Ravens, was playing on that very, very good Ravens defense. But he used to tell me that Jack Del Rio, when Del Rio was the linebackers coach there, just completely changed the way he saw the game, because Del Rio was one of those D'Amico type of linebackers that could just kind of see things differently mm-hmm. and taught him exactly what to key in, what to care about, like what tendencies you could pick up and all of that. And you see a lot of that with D'Amico and his players. That's why Christian Harris, I think, took that big jump forward in the second half of 2023. I don't think he necessarily would have made that on a team where he didn't have a guy like D'Amico Ryans.
Probably
to,
not.
To teach him.
Yeah, I mean, and that goes back to San Francisco. You hear guys in San Francisco. That's why, I mean, Azeez Al-Shaair, that's why he's here. You know, he was a backup in San Francisco, and,
yeah.
and D'Amico was the linebackers coach there. So, yeah, he's got a long history of that.
They do have they've got an intriguing linebacker room, because they've got a lot of guys that you get intrigued by, and that you can see them playing a role. You just don't know exactly what the role is going to look like. But even going back to Jamal Hill, the rookie from last year, he was very, very raw when he came in. But when you watch him out on the field, man, he's got size, he's got range. You know, there's a lot of potential upside there with Jamal Hill. That Neiman, the linebacker who's mostly a special teamer, you know, and think of him more as a special teamer, but you'd like to see, okay, maybe he can develop more as a linebacker here in this environment.
Do you think a healthy Christian Harris just slides right back into his old spot, or has Henry Toa Toa done enough to where it's a super competitive situation?
I think it might end up being a little bit of mix and match with Azeez and Christian Harris, depending mm-hmm. on how healthy Christian Harris actually is.
Yeah.
And just, you know.
And how suspended Azeez Al-Shaair is.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, like Christian Harris, in theory, you look at him, you think, man, boy, he could end up being one of these guys that's a three-down linebacker that's great in pass coverage and all the other stuff. He hasn't clicked, at least as of 2023, in the pass coverage side of things.
Yeah.
But that's something that's – for linebackers, there's a whole big mental side to pass coverage.
Yep.
Because just by recognizing routes and using proper leverage and everything, that goes a long, long way.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Cushing always had better coverage grades than people expected, because he wasn't the guy that you wanted to line up on a tight end and have him carry him all the way down the sideline.
Right.
But he was really good at playing the angles and pretty good at anticipating. So some of his physical weaknesses he made up for. But you got to, like, Fred Warner, you watch Fred Warner break down film and everything. The guy just sees the game differently.
Yes
he's a freakishly good athlete, but it's his ability to anticipate that makes him really good.
It's good, man. Couple guys. I mean, these are two guys, Daryl Taylor, EJ Speed, who we just heard from. They signed one-year deals here to jump into pretty competitive rooms, you know, like it's a lot of confidence on their part to make the team. And then I obviously a lot of hope that whatever the magic D'Amico dust is on linebackers and defensive linemen applies to both of them. People weighing in on the text page, going back to Five Reasons I Hate You and expressing my disgust for Wrigley Field, particularly the troughs in the men's room. Text message, the best part of peeing in a trough is when they're filled with ice and all of you work together to melt the ice.
To melt the ice. Yeah. No, and you do feel a little
team building
accomplishment.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you just, you know, you individually might be focused on one little cube of ice to see if, yeah.
Right. But I
always feel like ballpark urine doesn't have as much cutting power as normal urine, because it's usually so diluted.
Very watered down. You know, yeah.
If you got four or five beers in you, that's not, you're not, it's not that bright yellow that you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
and trying to melt an ice cube.
And that's borne out in the many YouTube videos that are out there of people deciding to headfirst slide through the troughs at Wrigley Field.
Oh, really? That's
yeah,
a thing?
Yeah, it's out there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's out there. Yeah, so it ain't that watery. Yeah.
What's wrong with you kids?
Yeah, I'm with you. The two, and yet I can't stop watching when I come across these videos. My two favorite videos involving some version of human function, the trough slides at Wrigley Field, and then the this is less contact level gross, you know. But at like the Kentucky Derby or the Indy 500, where they have those rows of portalettes on the infield, and people try to run across the top, like hammered, try to run across the top. You know, they're trying to run across like 50 portalettes, and you know they make it 20 until a foot gets stuck or it's raining and they slip and break their head open. That's really fun, you know.
Yeah, I always I want to see a sober person do it. I don't know how actually difficult it is. Give me one of those guys. Give me one of those martial arts guys from the movies that weighs 98 pounds and can just kind of glide over it like it's nothing.
Yeah. How many
I don't like watching anything where somebody might fall. I couldn't watch that. I couldn't watch that video of the guy falling on the ice rink at the Galleria.
Oh, I wouldn't have been able to watch the did video of the actual fall come out? I haven't seen I've only seen the aftermath. Oh, really?
And it's exactly what I feared. I did watch it.
No.
Like
no,
it was I forced myself to. But it's like he lands and the legs split out immediately. Like there's nothing you can't tuck and roll. You got no chance.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nasty. Some idiot falling off of a portalette, you know, like on a tuck and roll situation. I can deal with that. Now, that's another idiot. The guy in the gallery is an idiot stealing, you know, stealing glasses and jumping.
You probably got a better chance of surviving a fall from that height when you're drunk than when you're sober, right? Your body's more relaxed.
The Galleria height or the portalette height? Oh, yeah.
Either of them.
Yeah, alcohol helps with the pain, if nothing else, I would say. Yeah.
And your body is a little bit more related. You don't necessarily realize the danger.
Probably.
The funniest part of Matthew McConaughey's book that he wrote, his autobiography or whatever it was when he talked about the time he got arrested in Austin. Because remember, he'd been playing the bongos naked for 18 hours or whatever. Yeah. He said he was in such a state of mind when the police arrived that in his mind, he was going to run towards the fence in his yard and then run up the fence
naked?
into like a backflip type scenario from the movies and then land behind the officers. Okay. And then as they were chasing him, he was going to dupe them that way.
Dude,
it didn't quite work out that way in reality.
That's a frame of mind right there, man.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Reginald Atula, Figgy Fig, hanging out with you on this Thursday. And I have bad news.
Mm-hmm. Have any good news?
Texas, sure. It's not going to be Texas related, so I don't think I can. I don't want to take us off track here because we got to get to the rewatch. Mm-hmm. But training camp tickets for the Texans. Today was the day that they became available. Today was also the day they became sold out. Like, in the span of, what'd you say it was? 11 minutes.
11 minutes.
People are really excited to see this team out
we're
of training
ready,
camp.
Man.
Yeah, man. We are...
26 days? Something like that?
I don't know.
I think it's 26.
That sounds about right, but I'm not doing the math. I'm going to be completely honest.
Mm-hmm. I
should be able to do the math, but I'm not able to do it right in this moment. All right. So, yes, excited to see this team. I am as well, and that's why I started my rewatch of the 2024 season to go back through the last year and see, one, refresh my memory, but then go back and see some of the things that maybe were trends, some of the things that maybe could spin forward, all that type of thing. And so yesterday I started with week one versus the Colts. Today, the Sunday night football game, week two at NRG Stadium, the home opener versus Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears, John Lopez. What do you remember from that game?
I remember a very, very highly anticipated game for obvious reasons. With obviously it was the Texans' first home game, number one. Number two, you know, C.J. Stroud coming off the year that he had and Caleb Williams as the number one pick. Very, very highly anticipated game that kind of went, you know, it was an ugly game. That's what I remember. It was a very ugly game. Although Kyemi Fairbairn made us think that, okay, this dude is hitting another level. I think he had hit a couple 50-yarders.
He did. One of those was a 59, if memory serves, because, you know, and that actually kind of covered up what was a penalty right before there. It was a Tunsil false start with 10 seconds left in the half as you're trying to drive, which, again, That's a frustration that I recall Texas fans having quite a bit last year. But we'll start here because you were talking about how it was an ugly game. Part of the reason why, Joe Mixon was not able to run the football very much, and that was offensive line-wise, right? Yeah. Like that was the offensive line was not generating a lot of push and creating a lot of holes. He was trying to make a little something out of nothing, but that didn't last very long. He was more involved in the pass game early and getting a jet sweep carry himself. That was some of the innovation that was promised. But Slowik didn't really deliver on it all the way through the season. But early on, you saw some of those, you know, some of those things that were promised when it came to Bobby Slowik innovation wise. And I felt in seeing some of those things, I was like, oh, I remember when I was hoping for these things and hoping that we see more of them. And I remember that during the season, we didn't get enough of that, maybe just because of execution alone.
But it was still obviously very early. So it was, again, kind of like I said yesterday, just hints of what was to come. But the defense also gave us a hint in that game.
They
were really good.
This was a significant difference in week one. Week one defense for the, I don't think I said this on air, but I was talking to you afterwards and I realized that I had not made mention of it. The defense in week one versus the Colts.
It's okay.
There wasn't like much to write home about. It did not signal, hey, this is a defense that's going to be one of the best in the league. Mm-hmm. Week two, we're a lot closer to that. I mean, these dudes were thudding up. These dudes were going and hitting hard. And then you had a couple of interceptions as well. Now, some of that was helped by the fact that Caleb Williams, one of them was kind of throwing across the body at one point. Another one was one of those where he tried to, you know, roll out and then throw into triple coverage, even though his man had a step and he just didn't get the right distance on it. But still, like, the defense looked a lot better. You were able to get some sacks. One of those being, and there was a couple of sacks that you probably should have had that you didn't, that Caleb was able to weasel out. One of those was Will Anderson Jr. kind of leapt up at Caleb, I imagine, in some ways trying to block, but also at the same time, it allowed Williams to get out from underneath him. And I was like, also, would Will have would he have gotten penalized if he just, he's bearing down. There's a couple of instances where Caleb Williams is booty butt naked open. He does not feel the pressure at all. And if you are a defensive end or a defensive player and you just drive into him, you could have an NFL blitz type, you know, 1990s, you got jacked up type hit.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, does Will not do that? One, because he's just trying to make sure a throw doesn't happen. But two, is he also like, I can't do that because there's going to be a flag, even if it's a legal hit.
No, that's fair. You know, these days you got to tackle him with your chest, basically, to make it a legitimate hit. But the other part about the defensive performance in this game, as I remember it anyway, you know, you mentioned Caleb Williams. We were also wondering about, wow, what a great effort. But it's also a rookie quarterback over there. Or, you know, how much of it is him? How much of it is them? You know, and Eberflus trying to get used to him.
And not only the Texans also played this differently because, again, you have Anthony Richardson. There is a level of respect for what he can do with his legs. Mm-hmm. Caleb has a mobility, but they very much, it felt like, that's a rookie quarterback over there, and we're going to test him. The first sack of the game in the second quarter is a 6-man rush with some movement involved in the middle. They were just like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't just we're going to be cautious. We're going to keep you in the pocket. This was, we are heating your ass up and see what you're going to do with it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for Caleb, he ended up on his back a lot. Somebody said from the 832, shout out to Aziz wilding out on the sideline. That's one of those, I saw it again and I was like, this is where, knowing that the reputation is going to come, and once you get the Jaguars, that this is going to be one of those things that people harken back to.
Yeah.
Seeing it live, I go, that is a dude who is playing hard with a guy who has not reached the sideline. I was 100% good with that hit.
But then it was on the sideline, too. You know, remember there was some sort of a mix-up on the sideline.
I think Nico Collins did a little something, too.
Yeah.
I think he might have slapped the ball or shoved somebody or something like that.
And that's the part that, as you just alluded to, people would point back to later and say, see, the guy's a maniac, you know?
And he's a dirty player.
Yeah. And that was my point was I don't think I saw anything in this game that made me go, that guy's a maniac, even though, you know, he was playing aggressive, as we know Aziz is. Someone asked on the text line, was this the Akers fumble game?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was late in the game. It kept this game way closer than it should have been, even as you watch the game be played. Man, the Texans were not efficient offensively. Although there was a few things that I found that were interesting in it. One, Brevin Jordan got a decent amount of love early in the season. I completely forgotten about before, you know, you lose him. And it makes me look at what could Brevin Jordan be this year? You know, he was a nice guy out of the backfield that kind of, you know, you get the ball to, you know, he has the athleticism. This game got me excited. And it wasn't like Brevin did a ton, but this game got me thinking and reminded me rather of just, okay, Brevin is here this year. When we talk about tight ends in that room, he only had one catch for 4 yards, but it was like, oh yeah, I've seen him a number of times kind of get involved, and I'm interested to see what a guy who loves tight ends and has one with that level of athletic ability, what he does with him. With all due respect to also to Cade Stover, who was doing a little bit of lead blocking. Remember, we were still doing tight ends as fullbacks at that point. Cade also, I'm interested to see, but Brevin, it was a reminder for me, oh yeah, This guy with this coach with this coaching staff, I'm interested to see what it's going to look like.
Yeah, I hadn't remembered that. I'm glad you brought it up because obviously we're talking about tight ends a lot right now. Maybe Brevin Jordan, in this offense might be. We're hoping Cade Stover, obviously, as well. Maybe Brevin Jordan has a little something here. But when it comes to the passing game, this was Nico all of a sudden saying, "Yeah, I'm really good. I got a new contract. Just watch me this year."
Yeah, and fair enough to 832 talking about Aziz throwing the punches afterwards. I will say, I watched the condensed version, and you'll be surprised to find out they didn't leave
in. They didn't show that.
That portion of it during the game, but that is fair.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the stuff on the sideline afterward is what people are going to point at point at.
That's just a competitor. speaking of competitors, are you familiar with Nico Collins?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like this was the game when Nico said, "I got the new contract. I'm really good. Watch me."
10 yards, 135. Oh, sorry. 10 targets, 135 yards on 8 catches, 1 touchdown. And this, all of that included in that was this particular catch that he made for 28 yards.
Strat of the gun on 2nd and 24. Here's the snap. CJ looking. CJ firing downfield. Hits Nico. 10, 5 to the end zone. Touchdown, Houston. A flag on the play.
Yeah, that's weight room right there, baby.
And it really was. Like, this was one of those moments where I wrote down, Nico Collins is a delight. Press coverage, and what he does, gets that first step outside, and then uses strength to get through. Mm-hmm. Like, once he gets that guy, that defender off kilter, strength to get through him, smooth route after that on the post, easy pitch and catch for CJ, obviously having a little bit of protection.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's evident what kind of day is going to happen when you see that touchdown happen.
Yeah.
But it's fun to see it. It's the way that he's able to operate. Just wanted to take a second to appreciate what Nico Collins is able to do on what a lot of inbreakers in this game, a lot of middle of the field type stuff, even though he can go over the top, he can go outside, he can do everything. And he also had some instances where playground happened and he got locked in with CJ as he's evacuating, got a lot of a few of those maybe 15, 20-yard intermediate type passes to him in this game as well.
That's when you're saying to yourself, worth every penny when it comes to Nico. But altogether, you're still looking at the scoreboard. You're still looking at scoreboard late. You're still looking at some hiccups that the Texans had, especially offensively. And you're like, man, they should be blowing this thing open.
All right, so speaking of wide receivers, remember, Stephon Diggs is still early in his time here as he's playing. Stephon Diggs had this particular play that I thought was very good.
Third down and 10, Texans from the Houston 23. Stroud in the gun, one back. Three receivers wide side right. CJ calls for the ball from Jarrett Patterson, the center tonight. Stroud gets the snap. Firing downfield, left side. Diggs with the catch and a first down, running out of bounds inside the 45 of Houston.
Yeah, the footwork along the sideline and the placement.
Yes, absolutely. I love listening back to these guys call the game.
That kind of got me excited a little bit.
It should.
Listening to them, man.
It should. But the thing about it, third down, you heard Vandermeer set it up 3-by-1. The one that isolated is Stephon Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
Inside release, runs a little flag route back to the outside. Nice, pretty, exactly what you expect. And my thought was, who profiles is that now?
Route running.
For this Texans team.
Yeah, that other route runner.
Right? Because Nico, obviously, we know he can do that type of stuff. Who is that now that profiles, especially get outside, isolation, route this guy up, get a big third down catch? Like, who profiles closely is that for in your mind?
I think at least early on, maybe for the majority of the season, maybe the entire season, it's going to be Christian Kirk. I think they're going to put him in that role. Veteran, savvy, can play in various, inside, outside, various, ways that he can play. I think it's going to be Christian Kirk. I think that's exactly why they brought him in, for that type of situation.
Okay. For some reason, and maybe this is just like I'm locking him into a box, I continue to think about Christian Kirk as, that slot guy. Obviously, he can take it deep, but then also work underneath, which I guess Diggs was doing a lot of that as well.
Yeah, a lot of drag routes.
I'll be interested to see if they utilize him in that way as well, where he, specific to this, but I think you know what I'm trying to get to. In a 3-by-1, I'd imagine Christian Kirk more in that bunch or that 3 wide receiver set to one side as opposed to being that ISO guy.
Maybe Higgins?
Maybe, but again, mm-hmm. that might be a lot to ask of him young, early. We'll see what that ultimately comes to. But mm-hmm. that was one of the thoughts. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. And yeah. they were very intentional getting the ball to Diggs early. Like, I think that's one of the things that we knew was happening in the moment. But you can absolutely see the intentionality that they had in getting him the football early. I'd like to see maybe how they do that with this year. A couple more things that I wanted to get to. The offensive line, I mentioned early on, you can see all of it early.
Mm-hmm.
You can see even more of it because this is where we started seeing twists happen where guys got hurt, missed. One of them was like Dare Ogunbowale actually back coming up and, you know, getting caught on this like kind of pin situation that's happening with the game. And, you know, you have a free Tremaine Edmonds go and hit C.J. Stroud on, a rush mm-hmm. that probably you should have been able to pick up. Six-man rush, but, you know, Dare, if he comes up and just hit that guy, he should be able to give CJ time. He doesn't because he's going and pinning the guy that is already on that's mm-hmm. already on the guard there. So that's one of those things. But Kenyon looked lost on a twist, and I was like, oh, there it is.
That was another one. But you also mentioned, you know, the blocking scheme there, and maybe that was, you know, within that building. In fact, I can almost bet that it was one of those, like, we've got to be able to fix these problems that the communication, which ended up being a big thing all year long, you know, people committing and being able to do some of these complex blocks, et cetera, just another sign. And then they win the game, and what happened afterward?
And then CJ and Caleb.
Yeah.
CJ wants to give Caleb some help, which he did, right? I was watching this again, and I'm like, Caleb did not feel pressure. He had a couple of sacks, as I mentioned, mm-hmm. that he just did not feel the pressure. The one with Will Anderson Jr. earlier in the game, mm-hmm. I get it. That's your blind side.
Yeah.
He missed Danielle Hunter on his strong side, where you should, even if you're not looking directly at him, you're looking downfield, you should, one, be able to count
feel
this
it.
Thing out.
Yeah.
You know, you should have a level of innate feeling as to, I'm here standing here for a while. Let me make sure that I'm not alone.
There might be someone coming.
You know? But also, this is where you should be able to use your peripheral vision, and he didn't. So, look, man, I think CJ was right to get, hey, don't take these hits, dog.
It was just funny,
you
man.
Don't want, it was funny. But
hey,
I do
come here, listen to me.
Yeah, come here. Can I hit one more thing before we go here?
Yeah.
This was, DJ Moore was the notable wide receiver. Obviously, Roma Dunze is there. Mm-hmm. They have a DeAndre Carter, some of these guys. But DJ Moore was the notable guy. This was the game where we had Sting traveling,
mm-hmm.
and I thought that worked pretty well for Sting, but Kamari was out there in a very particular way, playing off a whole bunch,
mm-hmm.
and he got a couple of times. That's a place that I'm going to watch as this season goes to just see how much development, because we talked about Kamari and we gave him a lot of praise as mm-hmm. Eagles do. I'm interested over the next few weeks to see just how much development Kamari has. In
you
this
and me
season,
both, man.
Because you could see the ways in which teams were challenging him, and the Bears were not a great team, and they had some success challenging mm-hmm. him. Although he had a couple of picks because Caleb underthrew when a guy
it's
going to
be one
of
the most key things of the season.
100%,
Kamar can do it. Yeah,
I want to see that development again, and then I also want to see. What can we expect him to have development on top of that in year two? Because he's mm-hmm. not a finished product, but where does it continue to go? Because he also is a very high IQ young guy at that as well. Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. It is June 29th. That is the June 29th freestyle by DJ Screw and the rest of the Screwed Up Click. It is a Houston holiday, baby. We are having holiday-type vibes. I hope that you're enjoying your Friday to this point. Again, appreciation to B. Scott. Appreciation to Sean Pendergast, both of which whom lent their voice to the program over the last hour. And we will keep it on rolling. Keep it on rolling on the day. All right. I am in day three, depending on how you view it, of my 2024 rewatch of the Texans season. I'm taking my notes to kind of revisit what happened in the Texans season. Of course, I reached my first speed bump of this. Did I say 29th? I meant 27th. Apologies. Rewatch, and I hit week three on the road, Minnesota Vikings. Lopez, what do you remember from this game?
All right, several things. This was a real eye-opener. Remember the first 2 weeks were like, yeah, okay, it's early on the first one. You know,
it was 2-0, right?
There were 2-0. There's going to be some growing pains as you get into your second season with C.J. Stroud. Then Then you get the Bears game, and you're like, well, that was kind of ugly. Should have probably won by more. But the defense is looking better. Week three is when I went, okay. Maybe there's more we need to be paying attention to. Because number one, I remember going into that game thinking, this is gonna be easy.
That's why I was looking like Sam Darnold.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's one of my points. What you just said. Number one, this defense is gonna make life miserable for Sam Darnold, and I don't know how good he is to begin with. And then he ended up just lighting you up.
I didn't realize how good the defense for the Vikings was.
That's two. That's the second thing.
They were
thing.
Killing. They
and
were
that's the one we probably should have known coming in. Brian Flores has bona fides in this league.
I didn't even think about
really,
that.
Really, really good defense coordinator. But at this point, we had not gotten to a place where we had a level of belief in Sam Darnold, Mr. Seeing Ghosts himself bounce around the league.
And it was still early, too, in the NFL season.
It was.
Yeah, but this was the first time I went, okay.
They might be for real.
Yeah, okay. No, well, not just are they for real, but like, is there something we need to start wondering about with this squad?
That's a fair point. You know? Well, going in, there was something that we knew was going to be a little bit of difficulty for the Texans, was that no Joe Mixon, no Dameon Pierce in this one. And so Cam Akers with a little bit of a return home of sorts as the running back. And I forgot that this game was not just bad in the aggregate of a 34-7 loss, but it was instant pain. Holding on Kate Stover to start the game, trying to grab Blake Cashman, who was going to have a beeline towards CJ, right? He timed the snap perfectly, which I don't know what that says about what the Texans were doing. But then also defensive tackle and nose tackle, in fact, Harrison Phillips, his name comes up a few times. He tips a little drop off that's supposed to go to Tank Dell, and then you have a Kamu Grugier-Hill interception.
Where'd he used to play?
Yeah, man, there's a lot of guys that I've already mentioned a couple of them. Another one pops up because if you used to play for the Texans and you wore purple on that day, it was your time to shine.
Didn't Jack used to be saved his life? Was that him?
Oh, was that Kamu Grugier-Hill? Remember we put his hands on him as he's leaving the field? Yeah.
He left off on a stretcher, man. I thought it was over. That brother played the next week.
And Easterby saved him.
I mean, I feel like in that instance, God saved him. Easterby was the vessel. But, you know, I get the point. Yeah,
Easterby took the credit for that one. Yeah.
Why am I not surprised? All right, some other things. Outside of, like, a big outbreaker by Justin Jefferson, like, early the D-line was pretty effective on early on. And then you end up with the situation where you start seeing the D tackles get moved in this one, which was a little frustrating at times. But Sam Darnold was flushed. Like, they were applying a level of pressure to him. But
he was nails, though.
He was. He was pretty damn good in this. All right, one of the first things I really wanted to make a big note of. There was a particular play that is funny enough. I teased this coming in from the last break, and B. Scott was like, ooh, Cade Stover. And I was like, oh, so you remember that vividly too, huh?
Yeah.
So there was a particular play where Cade Stover ends up one-on-one with Jonathan Greenard. Again, another one of those Texan to Vikings transitions there. And Greenard steamroll. I'm talking cartoonish steamroll where you end up with Bugs Bunny a centimeter high because he is just laid out flat like paper. That's what Cade Stover looked like. And I don't even know if that's someone's fault in particular as I was looking at it. It was a slide right on the offensive line, it felt like. Cade Stover is on the backside. And, you know, like, Stover just gets killed so quickly that CJ can't get the ball out quickly, which I imagine was what he was looking to do.
Yeah.
And I mean, CJ is tackled before any of the three routes that are down there even have any level of break. So it was just a great job in my mind by Brian Flores, who brought guys up to the line and they had like six available. One of them drops out on the side where you have a predominance of players. So you sliding your line to the right, the Texans, does not have as much impact. And then he's also not a known blitzer, Brian Flores. So he just took all of the things that you would think about about his time and when you're game planning against him, and he flipped him on his head. He blitzed a lot in this game. And I imagine if you were game planning, a reasonable offensive coordinator goes, I should not expect a whole bunch of blitz, except he brought a whole bunch of it, and this team was not capable of handling
it. Well, and the other thing is, you know, the offensive coordinator, and this is the first time where you go, whoa, why are you putting the tight end in one-on-one? Like that, you know, against a guy like Jonathan Greenard. And that was an ongoing theme as the season progressed. But in that game, Greenard was amazing. I mean, like, he just destroyed the Texans in that game. And I know you rewatched it, so I know this part, this was the other point I was going to make that was very memorable of that game. I know you're going to have something on this part.
Maybe.
Laramie Tunsil season began.
Buddy. 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 There were so many, like, illegal formation by Laramie Tunsil. And so many of them also, it wasn't just that there was a foul on the or on the play. It's that it negated solid or two big plays time and time and time and time again. Like, this was peak frustration. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there was a point in time where you had three straight false starts in this game.
Yes.
In the second quarter. It was disgusting. And one of the things that I had, it was an insane amount of not just like procedure penalties. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just Laramie as well, because I can mention him, but there was
procedure
other
folks. Was just pre-snap anything.
All the way across.
Yeah.
And my thought was, the boys are shook. But then also, does any of that line up with like a lack of belief in the game plan, right? Because one of the things that we got to at some point in the season, and that's why we saw like a switch up in the, you know, the ways that the offensive line was handled. It's one of the reasons why Cole Popovich obviously retains or now has the start of the, you know, the big time offensive line job, is that at some point late in the season, they made that switch because those guys did not believe in what the offensive line game plan was for Bobby Slowik. Was week three too early for that to creep in? Because it felt like there was a lot of times where these guys weren't locked in, and I wonder how much of that was just they didn't believe in what they were doing.
I actually just here as you bring up the question, I actually don't think it was too early, because you're also seeing tight ends get steamrolled. You're seeing C.J. Stroud not able to get the ball off, receivers not able to even get into the break of their route, and I don't think it was too early. Now that we look back at it, but that was the week. And boy, the next week was fun on the radio when we're like, all right, what's going on with Laramie? Because Laramie was the focal point of it all, but it was the entire line, which would indicate maybe there's a lack, even if it's not lack of confidence, maybe just uncertainty, you know, a certain amount of uncertainty with what's being called and what they're asked to do.
All right, so you mentioned this game was very much are they getting big boyed coordinator-wise?
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing that you look Brian Flores to Bobby Slowik. On the other side, Kevin O'Connor.
O'Connell.
Kevin O'Connor is the basketball analyst. But Kevin O'Connell, thank you, I appreciate that. The head coach and play caller for the Vikings. It did feel like he had a one up on D'Amico as defensive play caller.
Yeah, it did.
And this is another thing. I don't know that there was a particular play, and I should have pulled this one, but there was a particular play where the Texans weren't rallying to the football, and I was like, I don't think I've ever seen, or I might not see that through watching the entirety of the season, a play where the Texans defense does not rally to the football. They might get beat. Guys might, you know, they might give up a big play, but at least they typically all as a team rally to the football. And I was like, oh, they look kind of dejected, like they did, like maybe they were smelling their own stuff or what have you, but they did not expect to be hit in the mouth in the way of the Vikings.
I think that second part is more of what it is. They didn't expect what we didn't expect. They didn't expect, Aaron Jones had a good game. As I remember it as well,
he sure did 100 and something yards.
Yeah, and then Aaron Donald doing his thing. I think they were sort of
who?
Just taking a. I mean, Sam Darnold.
Yes. Okay. I legitimately was like, wait, I don't know where you're going.
It probably felt like Aaron Donald was on that defense, to be honest.
And then Sam Darnold was having a good game. I think they were just kind of like the offensive line. They were just like taken aback, you know, take a stun, so to speak.
Now, to that point, you mentioned the running game, and I mean, They ran the ball pretty well. This was a 118-yard performance on the ground. Not crazy, but also like pretty efficient in the way that they did. And one of the things about this is we haven't talked a lot about this offseason. How confident are we in this team's ability to stop the run? This game, like, they got mauled a lot. And there was only really one explosive, which was later in the game when the game was starting to get out of hand. But still, just – The Texans stacked the box in this game far more than any other game. Like 40-something percent of the time, the box was stacked versus like the next most of the 17 games last year, which was in the 30s. And still, you had a 100-yard game on the ground. Like, how confident are we in this team's ability to stop the run going forward? Because it's largely the same when it comes to trying to stop the run. When you talk about the spine of the defense, it's Foley, it's Settle, it's Mario Edwards, it's Aziz in the linebacking core, it's Henry in the linebacking core. It's largely the same. We haven't really talked about them stopping the run.
Yeah, and that's one of the best things about you rewatching all these games translated to this year. So I think, you know, there is a certain amount of skepticism, and we've talked about it going into the draft even, certainly into the offseason, you know, the interior defensive line, that's where it starts. And then it comes back to, you know, linebacker play. Well, we feel pretty dang good about linebacker play, especially now EJ Speed is in and all that. But the interior defensive line, fair question. Absolutely one of the things that we need to be watching as they go into the training camp and the preseason. But I also feel the fact that the secondary, since that game even, got so much better, it gives you more options up front in your front seven, you know?
I would sure hope so.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they weren't bad as a whole stopping the run last season. I don't want to make it seem like that. However, that was a point where I think there is the opportunity for growth and development. Obviously, watching this particular game. I want to take you, because I've tried to put in some audio. This game, very easily, you could look at this game as a microcosm of the season. Mm-hmm. Easily. Especially if you wanted to go through and look at how it didn't look good for CJ. However, even in this, the microcosm stands, because there were gems within the scrap heap of this. And one of those was this particular play to Nico Collins.
We marked the ball at the 47 in the Viking logo. It's third down. Third down and 11 for the Texans at the Viking 47. CJ shotgun. Dare in the backfield. Two receivers left. Here's the snap to Stroud. CJ pumping, firing downfield to his left. And Nico with the catch. Running out of bounds inside the 15-yard line. Mark him at the 13. That's the big play they needed.
And you can hear it in Mark's voice. Yeah. That is true. It is a third and 11. You need a big play. And allow me to draw the play up for you so you can kind of see. And Nico Collins lined up to the left. There's a second wide receiver inside. Nico motions in. So he's still the outside guy, but now it's a little bit tighter.
Yeah.
A switch release, so he ends up as now the inside guy. And then from there, he runs kind of what I typically refer to as a flag, you know, just kind of like maybe a corner route of sorts. And this is just a gorgeous football by CJ Stroud, where he feathers it in perfectly, and it's where, I mean, Nico is making basically a fingertip catch, but it's only
in the right spot.
It's perfectly over his shoulder where only he can get it. And I'm like, there's CJ in the midst of running for his life, in the midst of sometimes making a few, like, not great passes at times. That is CJ Stroud showing you that, hey, the greatness is in there, even in a season and in a game where maybe it wasn't as good as people anticipated and hoped. That was one of those plays that was like, no. For anybody that's like sophomore slump or whatever, even if you want to get there, CJ still has it.
And that's the microcosm part that you're talking about, you know, in terms of all the problems that he faced, whether it's running the ball and protection and running for his life, which he did a lot of, and getting sacked and getting hit, which he did a lot of in that game. There were still moments where you're like, okay, he's trying to overcome things that are almost impossible to overcome.
Now, the last thing I have for you is also CJ, but this is the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a positive spin on the back end of it, so please hear me out. But this was CJ Stroud, unfortunately, turning the football over.
Third down and a long seven across the Houston 32-yard line. Crowd revs up the volume. One back, Stroud in the gun. On third and seven, leg down. Here's the snap from Scruggs. CJ backing up. CJ coming forward, throwing downfield, and intercepted. Cameron Bynum tackled by Dell in Viking territory. Two picks on the day.
By the way, only the second game in CJ's career that he had a multi-interception game, right? Obviously, we talked a lot about that the year prior. But it's kind of interesting because the play itself, or the route combination that you were looking towards, kind of a reverse of that other play. Motion in, Nico Collins switch release, except this time he's running the inside route.
Okay.
But because he's running the inside route like a post, it's too high safety, so it's supposed to be middle open. That should be the place where, you know, Nico's getting the football. CJ throws it behind him, kind of outside. And I was like, why does he make that mistake?
Yeah.
At the same time, Tank Dell is on the other side, the wide receiver, and his route is supposed to kind of go up, maybe up the seam possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But he ends up kind of taking this inside drawing into the middle of the field as well.
Bringing the safeties.
And so my thought was, I do wonder, does Tank Dell understand what the intention of that play is? And I don't say that to knock Tank and try to say that he's any level of dumb or anything. I think that this may be, and this is the positive spin I have on it, what is Nick Caley talked about imbuing into his team this year? He wants these guys to understand not just what the play is, but what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
And I think if in that instance Tank Dell understands, we're trying to attack the middle of the field with Nico Collins. His route does not also end up in the middle of the field. He does not drift inside. If anything, he drifts outside to pull that safety further and give CJ a window to throw into. And that's one of the things I'm hoping in a negative play here that I can spin into a positive, is that you'll see more of these instances where a play that goes bad and further and basically wipes out the ability to come back in this game is an opportunity for you to make a big play, because everybody on the field is working to try and get the play as designed to work.
Now, that's true. I thought you were going to go somewhere else. I thought you were going to go to CJ Stroud. having control at the line of scrimmage and understanding maybe the safety was cheating. We don't know. I mean, you saw it more recently than I did. But, you know, maybe the safety was cheating. Maybe there was movement after the snap where if C.J. Stroud on the field can maybe make an adjustment, whether it's Tank Dell or in this case, Christian Kirk or whomever, maybe he can make an adjustment that eliminates that.
Yeah. A couple more small things. The fourth and final sack on CJ, Kenyon Green just got diced up by a nose tackle, not overpowered, diced up.
Yeah.
And then another one, there was a seam shot that I think CJ was trying to throw up to Dalton Schultz that he just couldn't get his hands on. I was like, that's Christian Kirk next year.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for that. Mm-hmm. So that was week three versus the Minnesota Vikings, and everybody kind of wants this. Everybody's like, when it comes to this game, what I'm trying to hear is Andre Ware.
Here's the give, and they blow the play dead. Looks like a false start on the Texans. Let's find out who.
Before the snap, false start. Offense, number 78. It's a 5-yard penalty. Still first down.
He got it out of the way early. Laramie Tunsil.
It's every week, though. That's you're a Pro Bowl player. There's no excuse for that. None.
That was absolutely the
field. 8:28 to go. First quarter.
This is my favorite part.
7-0 driving.
Honestly, I don't know why I get upset about it anymore. I should have come to expect it.
That's not week three, though, right? Like, that's not week three, but that was the feeling that everybody had revisiting the Minnesota Vikings game. So now that one's out of the way.
So I'm certain at least one of them are
yeah, the Brooklyn Nuts.
Yeah, they were the Nuts this year. One of them are high. So they got the 8th overall pick, and they have... Well, it's coming down. Okay. Where are these five?
I'm sure they vomited in the stands.
They have the 19th. They got the 22nd. Oh, they're all late. 26th. 27th. they got these late joints, man. So they don't have any in the top five, one in the top 10, and all in the late 20s. So we'll see what they do. Are they able to just find one all-star level player? All them damn picks. But you're right. They got to be trading some of these away to. I mean, you got to use some of these picks to try to get a player, somebody worth a damn.
You think so? You can get real aggressive with five first-round picks to move up a few spots.
I'm telling you, boy. They probably should do that. At least move up some to do that. All right. As we continue here. Going here on the drive. All right, Clint. When we look at this Texans team, and I think a thing that a lot of people really have excitement about and why some are really high on the Texans is because, you know, unlike some other teams that are playoff contenders, like let's say Pittsburgh, for example, right? I think a big difference between the Texans and the Steelers is the Texans have a lot of guys that you still feel like are taking steps, are still going to take steps forward. We watched it last year, right?
So like Rockets and Astros.
Yes, like we watched last year. Stingley was good, but then he took a step to be arguably the best corner in the sport, right? First team, yep. All pro. We saw even Nico take more steps. We've seen countless players take steps for this team. Will Anderson took another step last year. Hell, even on the lower end, Henry Toa took another step. Like, they just got a bunch of guys that you look at that, yeah, their best ball is clearly ahead of them. And I think that's a thing why a lot of people love the Texans, not only this year, but for the future, is they got a lot of guys whose best game is ahead of them. I would pose this to you and the people. Is there anybody that you have concerns that could take steps back? Right? I think we understand and see these, that they've got a lot of guys that you feel like they're, including their big guys. CJ, their best ball is ahead of them. Anybody you look here that fits the bill the other way that you would keep your eye on potentially of taking a step back?
Yeah, for me, I've thought about this a lot since we talked about it yesterday. I think... For me, I'm trying to get somebody that it's potential realistic, like not somebody that's a depth player. I'm concerned about Jalen Petrie.
Okay. All right. He's not on my list. I got a couple, but Jalen Petrie, I think that's a fair one.
Well, I think when you look at this secondary has a chance to be one of the best in the game. And I think that when you look at how offenses are going to attack this secondary, it's not going to be Derek Stingley. And I believe through the air, now we'll see if they have time and that pass rush can get there. Now they can hold that pass rush off or not. But I think the one unknown at this point in time is, can Jalen Petrie cover? Like, can Jalen, and I'm not holding Davante Adams in the slot with no deep help against the Jets. I'm not holding that against
him. No, that's not his fault.
That ain't on him. I'm talking about, can he cover down well enough? Can he stay healthy through a whole season? Can he cover down well enough to not be the one that's targeted early and often and taken advantage of in coverage situations? I know he's got crazy instincts to stop the run and rush the passer. I know that. The one concern, which has been a concern of mine the whole time, it's why I like the Jalen Smith kid out of USC, because he could potentially be a cover nickel defender, or Kamari Lassiter can move in and be a cover nickel defender in place of Petrie when need be. Petrie, nickel defender, cut from a coverage aspect, to me is one that could potentially be exposed and be a problem. So I don't know if that's a step back as much as it is. I just don't know.
Can teams get him in that position?
Yeah.
Because it seemed like, because that Petrie's a good one, because he's had year one, maybe he had some issues missing tackles, but year one, pretty good. Year two, step back. There are a couple of times we saw him sitting on the sideline,
late in season, playoff situations,
next to Matt Burke and D'Amico. Then last year it seemed like they found a way to be able to put him in the right spots, except for a couple of times he got caught. I think the Lions caught him a couple of times in that game in big moments against St. Brown, and then obviously the one that it's really kind of messed up, because it feels like his, in terms of coverage, his season just seemed to come down to that one play on Thursday Night Football against Davante Adams, right? Like not other plays. Like, he wasn't getting exposed like that game in and game out when he was playing. I think Petrie is a pretty good one. There's someone, our guy Magic. This is one of them. I've got four on my list. Magic here on YouTube and Twitch, just text it in, and that's Kamari Lassiter. I think Kamari Lassiter, it's an odd one, because he would be one that you would think, oh man, there's another step forward to his game. That was year one. He played that way. What's it going to look like after that? And he is one that I think is just at least worth the discussion. I'm not sitting here saying that any of the people that we're going to talk about are going to, but I do think, all right, how will teams attack Kamari Lassiter this year? Right, like what will be the second route? Yeah. Because yes, we know he kind of played better with the speed thing last year, and that didn't become an issue. But I do wonder now, 17, 18, 19 games of tape on him, if there's a different adjustment of how people, you know, attack him, and will it be a step back?
Well, I that's a great point, because 1 year is a small sample size, and you know, we saw a C.J. Stroud step back relative to that first year. But what did he really take a step back? It was because the first year was so great. That's what Kamari Lassiter's up against, right? The first year was so damn good, it's going to be hard for him to duplicate that. Now, I will say this. Speaking of kind of tying him to C.J. Stroud and what went on there, I do think that there's I think there was a conscious effort to not have Kamari Lassiter in press situations when he against guys that he didn't have no business covering. He would bail and play soft. I think he benefited, which all great DBs do, and units like this. I think you benefit from that pass rush that you have up front. And so I say all that to say there has to be, it's human nature, man, if you're D'Amico Ryans, to go, hey man, I'm gonna do something a little different.
Yeah, the CJ comp is a good one, because year two, maybe they felt a little bit more comfortable with CJ and thought he
all
can,
of a sudden I'm gonna do this,
he
this
can handle
and that.
More. Yeah. Yeah.
And so with Kamari, it's like, do you keep on keeping on and protect him and say, hey, we're gonna just keep letting this youngster play to his strengths, or do you go out there and push the envelope and find out what his weaknesses are? Like, do you put him in situations different than last year?
But the thing
and
is,
he struggles.
But the thing is, you feel like he can, and I think he developed it with CJ too, but you feel like he can handle more.
right? Like when they started to move him around and move him inside, you feel like if he wants to get out there and say, well, let's do more with him, it feels like he can handle that. He's just one of all the young players to me that potentially, I agree with you, Magic, could be at least in that conversation.
No, I think that's a great one. In fact, that's the best one. I mean, that's the best one that you can think of, because it was, again, a big factor here is that the first year was so good, it's going to be hard to match. You know, that is just reality. And so the expectations are unfairly high. And so how do you define a step back? I just hope that D'Amico just keeps doing what he was doing with him already and puts him in position to come up and be a thumper, which we know he will do, instead of, you know, all of a sudden get real stingly aggressive with him and ask him to do some things that may put him on an island. We'll see. Well, I mean, maybe he does those things and he answers the bell and he's better. He's significantly better than any of us thought. That would be best case scenario. But I like the Kamari Lassiter pick right there.
Couple more I have here. Two veterans, Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon last year was a Pro Bowler, over 1,000 yards, even with some of his injuries. Is he somebody that you potentially look at as taking a step back? We understand they went and got a Nick Chubb, you know, to kind of be there in the backfield too. But Joe Mixon, I think, could be worth, you know, a conversation in this with age and everything.
Well, yeah, the thing there with Joe Mixon is he had to do so much of it last year on his own, kind of off script, off schedule, if you will, bouncing something, cutting something back. And so you would like to think that at the very least, this new regime up front, the new offensive line coach all the way down, you would like to think that at the very least they're going to be better in the run game. It's easier to run block than it is pass block. It's less reaction and more. Hey, this is who I got, and I'm going to go move mass kind of deal. Hopefully, they at the very least got that in here. So I would think, as much as Joe Mixon did last year on his own, that this year would be a little bit easier, and he'll probably produce more. So yes, it's potential, obviously, because he had a hell of a year. But boy, if this offensive line isn't good enough for him to take a step forward and for life to be a little bit easier for Joe Mixon than it was last year, whoo, we got some problems.
Joe was one, and then Azeez Alshire was the other veteran that I look at. And like when he played, obviously his importance, and he was really good. Obviously, he's a year older, and we did see some chinks in the armor last year, especially late in that playoff game, coverage-wise in the middle of the field. And he, just like with Mixon, they did go out and get a starting caliber player that potentially is behind him in E.J. Speed, who has started for years. Azeez is one, Clint, that I look at and say maybe he is one where his best ball potentially isn't ahead of him. Maybe he is one that maybe takes a step back in the middle for this team.
Yeah, look, I think Azeez, I would be okay with Azeez Alshire taking a step back. And let me explain. Like, I would be okay if there was somebody else on the field in obvious passing situations, in critical situations where the other team's being aggressive and trying to score. We saw Kansas City take advantage of him time and time again in the middle of the field. And really, if you watch him, it's just a matter of time before that happens. So if the Texans are in a position where they've got to play a shell defense, they got to play a middle open defense where they're allowing guys like Travis Kelce and good tight ends to roam the middle of the field freely, Azeez Alshire is going to be a sitting duck. So I would be okay if the step back was Azeez Alshire and it was actually in playing time. If there was somebody else that could fill that role that covered a little bit better. So that one I wouldn't be too disappointed in.
And then the one we kind of kicked this thing off is, I just say this name just because, as you kind of said, it's been so good. And, you know, I feel like even more teams are going to treat him differently. Do you think we've seen maybe not just the best, but do you think potentially Nico Collins takes a step back? Because this is a guy, Clint, if he'd have stayed healthy the last 2 years, I mean, he got to 1,000 yards. He missed six plus games last year. Last year, and then the year before, he had missed multiple games. He may have been a 1,500-yard receiver the last 2 years had he been healthy. Do you think, and when I say step back, that doesn't mean, Clint, all right, man, hey, he only got 1,100 yards. Sometimes your step back, your numbers may look different, but you can look and see, that a guy is still playing at a certain
rate. Yeah, look, being the biggest Nico critic in town for his first 2 years of his career here, I have no problem being critical. But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm convinced Nico Collins, his game is recession proof. His game is, I mean, he's not dependent on the go route. He's not dependent on being in one position all the time. He's not dependent on getting the perfect matchup all the time. You know, he can hurt you in the quick game, the screen game, the deep game, the play action game, the middle of the field, this out route running, and he can hurt you with the instincts when it comes to the scramble play. I just think if health is the only thing that's going to hold back Nico Collins, if Nico Collins stays healthy for three quarters of the season, he's going to get 1,000-plus yards, and he's going to be one of the better overall wide receivers in the league. I don't think he's ever going to get the love that he deserves. I think that right now when we hear a conversation about Nico being one of the best wide receivers in the game, I'll be honest. Like, I'll sit back and go, wait a minute. But when you look at the all-around ability to just flat-out produce in multiple ways and impact the game in multiple ways, Nico's got to be in that conversation.
Did you get the feeling, and obviously he's had folks around him, but do you get the feeling that you've watched teams really make a concerted effort to take him away, like we see with these other guys, right? We've watched teams try like hell to take away Justin Jefferson or to take away, you know, Tyreek Hill or to do certain. Do you feel like he's getting that? He's got that kind of respect yet?
I think the Miami game last year is when we kind of started seeing teams tilt coverages his direction. But I don't think it's been an all-out full-court press like we've seen.
Because he still have had Tank guys out there, and there's still been. Yeah.
Every season brings highs.
I'm in my drop top, cruising the streets.
And lows.
No way, because I know one of you two assholes would have done the same thing that I just did.
Are you kidding me?
This trio always has eyes on the market in H-Town. It's time to buy or sell. It's stock up.
The arrow's pointed up.
Stock down.
They're selling, Mortimer.
On the Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Damn right. The number one afternoon drive sports talk program in the wonderful city of Houston. That'd be this one, The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. And every hump day, every Wednesday, right during this time, we do a little stock up, stock down. And today we're talking AFC South, the Houston Texans division, that AFC South division, where you normally find, you know, the Jaguars in the basement, as I tell y'all. And, you know, yeah, the Colts have won a Super Bowl here and there. But 2025 is different, AFC South. Young Stroud going into year three. New OC, new playbook. We're on the show. What is your stock down first off for the AFC South right now, where we are in the offseason?
We're going down now.
I like to get the negatives out of the way.
Yeah, you do. My stock down is one that I know some people here listening are going to get mad or whatever, but
hold on, so
my stock down is Anthony Richardson, and I hate it. He is somebody, Clint, that I actually root for, and I want to see that talent to be shown. Like, for me, just I'm a fan in general, and I think there is an argument for just pure talent in terms of arm strength and what he could do with it. Now, he can't, I don't know if he could hit the three of us if we were standing 5 to 10 feet away from him consistently. But what he could do with his legs, the size and everything, like, it may be the best in the league from that position, just complete, just raw talent.
Yep. Yep.
And I'd like to see that rolling through. But my man about to get beat out by Daniel Jones. I mean, yeah, what the hell? Dan Jones coming in, right? He said the shoulder thing. He did say he'll be ready for training camp, but right now, as tough as it is for me, because I do root for him. I think he's a good kid. I like him, and I do want to see what that looks like, if that talent could be put together and found, probably something like what we're seeing the guy in Buffalo doing, but maybe even more so. To me, though, when you are the number four overall pick, and in year three, and Dan Jones is about to beat you out, stock is way down right now.
Well, the hype was real. I mean, Shane Steichen coming off of what he did with Jalen Hurts, and then you got a guy as talented as Anthony Richardson, although he was young and inexperienced. You think, hey man, they can bring this kid along. And look, it just goes to show you, man, no matter how talented you are, when you stay injured and you tap out as a quarterback, it's hard to come back. It's hard to recover. It's hard to hard to get better. It's hard to develop. And unfortunately, I don't know that we're ever going to see Anthony Richardson excel at this level. I hope I'm wrong, because I'm with you, man. That is a combination of talent that is second to none. I mean, it is got the potential to be special. But
like, I was glad to see Josh Allen. Glad to see Josh Allen put it together and be like, damn, man, that's what you're seeing. I'm glad to see Lamar put it together, but I'm with you, man. I like, if he loses here and Daniel Jones beats him out, I don't know who's.
Well, you get on that Justin Fields path, and it's gonna take somebody getting injured, and you get another shot, and then you capturing lightning in a bottle kind of deal.
And if it ain't working with Shane Steichen, then I don't know.
Oh, I agree. I know. Look, I agree. There. Although I will be honest. Now, I haven't studied them to that degree, but watching them against the Texans, I am highly surprised at the game plan and how he was being used. I could not believe we didn't watch a conservative run the ball downhill with Taylor and him and throw it when you have to kind of approach. Throw it to take shots. I could not believe that within the first few snaps of the game, we're watching this guy and gun take snaps and throwing RPOs and trying to process a defense at a high level right out of the gate. Like that shocked me. So maybe a different squad, a change of location would help him.
You are listening to Stock Up, Stock Down right here on The Drive with Sterner and Hughley, as we do every Wednesday afternoon right around this time. Do our best Jordan Belfort impression. Take a look at a market. We're doing AFC South, that division, the Texans division. You find them in year in, year out. That is today's edition. Ron, stock down. The young quarterback up in Indianapolis. Over to you, Clint. What is your stock down for the AFC South heading into 2025?
Boy, y'all going to hate me for this one. I get ready. That Texan line's going to light up. But my stock down is the Texans offense.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought mine was bad.
Yeah, no, mine's
bad. I thought mine rooted for Anthony Richardson.
Look at it however you want to look at it, man. I mean, a year ago this time, we got a five-headed monster. We're coming off Rookie of the Year. We got an offensive coordinator that's the next big thing in the NFL. And here we sit now with a new offensive coordinator, new O-line coach, done shipped Laramie Tunsil's ass up out of here. It was so bad. The quarterback, although I believe that it's a little bit strong to say he backslid and had a rough year. I don't think it was as good as year one. I think he did the best he could with what he was given. But nonetheless, I think overall the Texans offense, if you just look nationally how they are viewed right now versus last year, I'm not going to say any names, but I remember going out to a Texans minicamp practice and looked at, man, you know, it is wild how different we're viewed right now than we were a year ago. So I ain't making anything up. This is real talk. I just think the Texans offense is stocked down right now. Whether we're talking, you know, locally compared to last year, you're talking about nationally, just overall, I think it's Texans offense.
Well, that felt like a solid punch to the junk there on a Wednesday, but I love you keeping it real. Yes, all right, we got the stock downs out of the way. This is Stock Up, Stock Down, AFC South edition on The Drive on a Wednesday. Bouncing back over to you, Ron, the show. Let's get these positives. Stock up in the AFC South for 2025. I guess it could not be positive, though.
Tyler would personally hate this. My stock up is, you said the Texans offense. Mine is the Jags offense. I think the stock. Now, I don't know what they're going to do, but their
I do.
Their offense is up. I know Liam Cohen is a very strange young man that doesn't quite have the Duval portion
of
that, but he's a, when it comes to the offensive mind part of things,
basement. Dwell.
He's got that pretty good, and Brian Thomas Jr. is the truth, the real deal. And then you add Travis Hunter over there as well. I like some of the things they did with the running game they've got there. And Trevor, to me, I agree. I think I heard
this is the year.
Brandon Scott say this. Well, I'm not saying this is year. Trevor's not trash.
But ain't a phenom.
And I think he's been put in. It wouldn't be the greatest situations he's been put in since he's been in the league. So I think this stock is going up
with the Jags offense. I'm not saying this is going to lead to a title, division title or anything.
No, and I wasn't trying to insinuate you were saying
that. I think their offense is stock up from what the hell it was last year. I think their offense is going to be.
Starting point is critical here with my point and Ron's point, by the way.
Yeah, so that's my stock up is the Jags off.
All right, Dirty Red, Clint Sterner, finish us off on a Wednesday for this AFC South stock up, stock down with your stock up for 2025.
Yeah, mine's Cam Ward in Tennessee. Yeah. Look, I was already high on him just from a skill set perspective. He's a Texas kid that has left several places in college where he went a better place.
The arrow's pointed up.
Literally three stops in college football where he left him a better place. I thought in my mind, like, hey, you know, hey, he's probably going to do that Tennessee at some point in time. Well, he gets there. There's reports coming out of training, OTAs and minicamp. He completed 18 straight passes or something like that. And then he gets in with the media, and he is unbelievably, you know, comfortable to the point where he's cussing with the media, which I'm a fan of a good cusser. But it just seems like he is a great fit in a situation, and one of those quarterbacks where no moment's going to be too big, no personality in that locker room is going to be above him. The void that is leadership in Tennessee from the quarterback position seems like it's going to be filled. I think Cam Ward is going to jump on the scene sooner rather than later.
All right, there you go, Cam Ward. I know you enjoy what he brings to the table. Not surprised to hear his stock is up. And that is specifically Cam Ward, not the Titans. Specifically Cam Ward, the quarterback.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.